Thank you for tuning in to Aster Investment Management's podcast series. This week, our Chief Investment Officer, John Eckstein, and Senior Managing Director, Mac O'Brien, discuss the current economic outlook in the era of COVID-19. Thank you both for joining us today.
Hello, and welcome back to our 21st episode of Aster's Economic Week in Review. As always, we have John Eckstein, Aster's CIO, with us. John, thanks again for joining.
Nice to be here, Mac.
Awesome. And then Sibylla, again, thanks for the introduction. Last week, we talked about several data points that we were going to go over. But John, why don't you just give a quick summary of what we're going to talk about today and kind of end it with a teaser as what you think are the most important data points that we're going to discuss.
Sure. I think we'll talk about the labor market, Michigan sentiment numbers. The housing market has had a few interesting things going on, capacity utilization and industrial production numbers. We talked about the market PMI numbers, the alternate PMI numbers come out a little bit earlier. So that's a May number. Yeah, maybe we'll talk about some high frequency stuff or some earning calls too. And we'll probably go over what's coming out in the next week.
Sounds great. We always start with the labor market. So let's jump right into how many jobs are open in the United States? How many people filed for unemployment last week? Run me through some of the interesting numbers, John.
There's a relatively new report called JOLTS. That comes out, the job openings number. So one flaw with that is that it is delayed, right? So the number that just came out in May was for the end of March. It only shows a decent decline. The numbers weren't declining anything like we saw the other labor market numbers. And so I'm going to say this is not really reflecting the state of the labor market. So normally I think JOLTS is pretty interesting just for color on, you know, where job openings are and what have you. But today I'm not feeling it.
So when we started this podcast, you know, pre-COVID, I always loved it because we were talking about the number of open jobs in the economy were like 7 million with an unemployment rate of like sub 4%. That was interesting. You have all these open jobs and you have a low today. It doesn't really matter, right? Because
there still are, you know, 6 million open jobs, 6.2 million open jobs. So the way they measure it, but you know, I mean, you have to wonder, like you're implying there, right? You have 7 million jobs open for years and years and years. And like, so what does that really mean? Obviously, employers aren't eager to fill those jobs. They would just raise wages until they filled them. So like, there's something more going on than just sort of your common sense. Oh, here's a number of people who want to get hired, right? There's something more going on there. Those job openings are sort of stubbornly high. And I mean, I think the rough numbers are important, right? Are there more jobs available than unemployed people, right? I was excited when that turned around in the recovery. But I feel like there's something more going on. Like, I don't feel like that 6 million number is real in some sense, right?
Yeah, interesting, John. I haven't put it in that context before.
So we got some newer numbers today. Recording this on Thursday, the 21st of May. Thursdays are when the jobless claims numbers come out. And so 2.4 million new claims this week, which is down from a revised 2.7. There were some errors in last month's numbers. And so also today in this week's report, that does not include the 1.2 million pandemic unemployment assistance, I guess, is that.
The PUA does not factor into jobless claims?
No. No, the jobless claims number that you see is the state jobless claims. It's the same number it's always been. They have an additional number, which people, for some reason, aren't publicizing as much. But yeah, so that's actually a much bigger number when you consider it together, right? So 2.4 million in the state program, 1.2 million in the federal program. That's 3.6 overall. It's still a very big, big number. People, you know, are going to be telling you, you know, sort of totaling up those number of claims since, you know, March 1st or whatever. And that's interesting. But the number of people who are receiving benefits right now is about 27 million, about 21 million from the states and about 6 million from the federal government.
I mean, we go over jobless claims every week because it's a weekly number and we don't have to beat the dead horse here. I mean, it's a high number. The numbers are so big, they're almost meaningless, right? The fact that they're still big is the only thing that really matters. Let's move on to some sentiment numbers. What is the Michigan sentiment saying, John?
So that's a number that has sort of bottomed out. You know, if you look at it, it was worse. So this is actually a May number as well, right? So they sort of divide their survey up in the first halves. It is looking, you know, sort of not as bad as maybe was expected and a little bit better than last month, though. You know, you actually see the current situation increase. So they so you have a sub-index. You're thinking about the current situation is getting slightly better, but the expectation is getting a little bit worse for consumers. But I would say essentially, you know, we took a big dive in April in consumer sentiment, and we're basically about the same place, maybe a little bit better.
Yeah, John. And, you know, a sub commentary that I read on that report was that the government relief checks were a huge positive in that sentiment report, which was a one-time thing, right? And then you have the extra $600 that the federal government's paying for unemployment checks, which is a huge number of people. And that dries up, I think, in August, that $600 extra a week for unemployment. You know, we'll see how when these states start to reopen and as the government assistance starts to get tapered off, if those sentiment numbers change drastically.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the idea that we're going to be able to get away with stopping the, you know, stimulus payments in July, I think is not true, right? Like, I think that's a fantasy.
You think the government will continue to pay the $600 extra a week past August?
I don't know if they will or not. Like, I think a lot of it has to do with electoral politics, honestly. But I think they're going to, I think the situation is going to be grim enough that they definitely should, right? Like 20, 30 million people out of work, right? It's not like Georgia's back fully in business. It's not like,
right. Well, let me just real quick for the listeners. So, you know, sometimes I want to make sure that what we talk about is common knowledge to us is explained a little bit further. So the states give unemployment insurance, right? So if you made X amount last year, then you may qualify for $300 a week in unemployment insurance or unemployment payment, essentially. That's pretty high. I mean, it doesn't get much higher than $400 or $500 for unemployment per week. And then on top of this, that the Fed, because of COVID, is tacking on another $600 a week in unemployment. If you are an average worker making an average amount of money, there's a very good chance that you're getting between $3,500 and $4,500 a month from the government to be unemployed, which is an outrageous sum of money. But the government's saying we want to put money in people's hands so they spend it and they kind of, you know, get takeout and they do what they need to do in order to kind of help this damaged economy. Right now, the Fed is saying that that extra $600, which is a lot of money per week, those payments are over in August. And what we're talking about now is that the potential for that to be extended past August.
Yeah, it's the federal government, not the Fed.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I say Fed, but federal government, correct.
Yeah, I mean, I do think we're going to be in a situation where if we don't have significant income support, there's going to be an indefinite depression. My vote is going to be for not doing that.
Yeah, no kidding. Let's move on to non-depressing depression talk, which would be home sales. Let's talk about the housing market, John.
Yeah. So one thing, I think in our first call, I said the word of the year was going to be forbearance. And in fact, we found out that more than 8% of mortgages are in forbearance right now, meaning that they're not making their payments, but they haven't been foreclosed upon. But that that number is up a little bit from the week before, but at a decelerating rate, right? So maybe things are getting worse at a more gentle pace in the in that part of the housing market, in the sense of, you know, people with mortgages being able to pay.
But you've also talked about applications in the past, and applications are normal.
Applications to purchase are about normal now. I mean, and they never dipped as far as the other things. And I think it's just one, I think there's people who want to move now, move out of Chicago, move out of New York City. And I think there's also, you know, people moving for jobs, moving to be near family, you know, stuff that was arranged, and they just have to go through with it.
And rates are low. I mean, if you were sitting, you know, you have this huge millennial population that were cool being footloose and fancy free. And if you are in your mid to upper 20s, low 30s, I mean, now is the time to buy a house. They're looking, they're saying, I'll never see rates this low. Their parents are probably calling them saying, hey, it's time to buy a house. We'll help you with the down payment or whatever. Because retail sales, existing home sales, were, you know, 4.3 million in the report this week, right? And so the key to that is demand is still out there.
Yeah, and I think that there are, and you're starting to get anecdotal reports of people. I think, you know, one of the things that's interesting is that everybody thinks that they're a bargain hunter. So in the age of commission-free trading and Robinhood, all these people who have never traded securities before are opening up new securities accounts, and it doesn't cost anything to trade, and they're buying the stuff that's getting beaten down the worst because they think, oh my gosh, it looks like this is on sale. Like, their airplanes or airlines or energy companies. I think people had that same feeling about houses, right? Where like, gosh, everything is going to be so beat up that now is the time to get into it. Right. So we'll see.
And then you, in a note you wrote to me, you said the building permits the lowest have ever been.
Yeah, right. And I think that's probably some sort of reflection of the shutdown, right? Where like there's been inconsistent regulations about construction, but probably new construction is probably the hardest to get approval for or to get people to show up for.
I mean, I know in Michigan, I mean, I live in Illinois, but I'm from Michigan. In Michigan, there was a good stretch of period of time where you were not allowed to have someone come in and dump mulch on your driveway so you could mulch your own yard. Like they couldn't drive on your, like, that was not allowed, which to me is wild. But yeah, so the building permits is probably a function of offices being closed and people just kind of holding off for the time being.
Yeah, we'll see what happens as things start to loosen up. You know, there's large parts of New York are, you know, phase one reopening, not New York City. So, you know, sort of all over the place. New York City says they're going to be open by the middle of June.
Until they say it's the middle of July, but yeah. Let's kind of take a 90-degree turn and go to PMI. And let's say, what did we learn from China's PMI numbers?
Right. So I think what you learn is that it's a lot easier for manufacturing to come back than services, right? So there's two things. One, China is a few months ahead of us, right, in terms of dealing with the virus. But on the other hand, they've done a much better job of dealing with the virus. According to the numbers, like they're, like we're still seeing 20,000 people a day. They're seeing 8. I don't know exactly how much their experience is going to map onto ours, but it seems to be much easier to restart an assembly line than it is to get the consumers back out there, right? Mm-hmm. So we could see the PMI, the purchasing managers indices, which are in manufacturing, usually taking as a proxy of manufacturing strength, and those might bounce back to relatively normal levels. They came out a little bit better than last month, actually, both the manufacturing and the services.
It's a good trend. That's what you want to see, right?
Yeah, not getting worse. I mean, still bad, but so these are sort of tricky indices. So basically, there's a 50-50 line. If it's 50% of respondents say things are getting better, 50% of respondents say things are getting worse. And so if you're 50, things are about the same. But that doesn't mean growth, right? You need a number above 50 to have growth. The number, the PMI number last month for market was 36, and today's is about 40. And so things are getting worse, but on balance, more companies say things are getting worse than getting better, but fewer companies are saying things are getting worse than getting better. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Which, speaking of companies saying things, let's go to earnings calls. You know, Royal Caribbean, I think you and I were talking earlier. What was the stat? 55%, John?
Yeah. So of the people who've had their cruises canceled, 55% didn't want a check. They wanted to put it down in deposit for a cruise next year.
Which is 55% more than what you would expect.
This is at least 55% more than what I would expect.
And if you don't know John, John loves cruises. John is a cruise nut.
I'm a cruise guy. So it's interesting too. So we've gotten some of the bigger retailers, some of the broader retailers this week, like Walmart or Target, and they've done phenomenally well. Mm-hmm. Their in-person stuff is going crazy. Their online stuff is going crazy. So it's not all bad news out there. And I think basically any place that was open did well, I think is the story of the last several months. And so you see the same thing from Home Depot or Lowe's where like, you know, if they're open, so people are going there. And you do see, seems like the supply chain is mainly recovering in terms of getting toilet paper back in stores and getting, I think there's still some, Walmart's going to change the sort of the variety of meat that they have so they can make sure they get it all in stock. So some of the supply chain is still adjusting. Something else I thought was interesting was that JP Morgan said that in the first half of May, spending was down about 2-4%, like credit card spending, below what they'd expect.
Credit card spending was down
between 2-4%
more than they expected it to be down.
No, about 2-4% less than expected without coronavirus.
That's not bad.
No, that's not bad.
At all.
That's not bad at all.
So they're saying that if coronavirus did not exist, then credit card spending would be around 4% higher than it is right now.
Right. And also another thing that he said was that about 40% of the people who asked to defer a payment didn't actually end up deferring a payment. So that might be the effect of the stimulus checks. again. I think you could say two things that are true. One is that, you know, maybe we could see a way 6 months from now, we're at 95% of the spending that we were a year ago. And two, that would be worse than the worst month of the global financial crisis. Right? If we're only at 95% of where we were a year ago, we would think that was a big win. And that's actually a shockingly low number, which is why, you know, I was saying that we're going to need to support people for longer than just through July, mm-hmm. if we want to avoid an indefinite downturn.
Especially if you see that it's working, right? So if everyone took the money and put it in their pockets and or in their mattresses, then you'd be less inclined as a government official to try to keep on paying the money and giving the support. But if you're starting to see the numbers come in and people are actually supporting the businesses, and those businesses are supporting other businesses, and, you know, multiplier effect after multiplier effect, then it does make sense to continue to support and to prop up. That's yep. it for our commentary on this week's data. John, what are we looking at next week?
Second reading on GDP for the first quarter. We'll get a few more confidence numbers. We'll get the claims number.
Next week, it will be really interesting to see how many numbers come in for the unemployment number again. But we will keep it tight next week, and you can get all the information probably less than 7 minutes. But thank you, everyone, for joining us and listening. We're having a lot of fun with the podcast. Please let people know about it. Please give us a subscribe and rate us 5 stars. Memorial Day weekend. Enjoy it.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.